Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Okay, we're here at the Big Apple Barbecue Block Party in New York City, Men Who Dine for Heritage Radio with the legend, Ed Mitchell of Wilson, North Carolina, known as the home of barbecue. Would you agree with that, Mr. Mitchell?
All the way, buddy boy, all the way.
So how many years you been here in New York City participating in this?
Well, actually, I'm one of the founders, so I've been here 11 years.
Wow.
Yeah, we started out with only three pit masters, and 11 years ago, and now has blossomed into what a beautiful event.
It's an incredible event.
Incredible event, yes.
And we're so glad to have you here in New York City.
I'm glad to be here, buddy. Trust me.
So tell us about what you do. What are some of the specialties that you do as a pitmaster?
Well, what they wanted to do is introduce New Yorkers to the true flavor of barbecue. And in my humble opinion, they let all of us interpret what we think is the true flavor. But in my humble opinion, you can't have a true flavor of barbecue unless you have sampled the whole hog, because each part of the animal has a different flavor profile.
Sure.
Yes, and so my specialty is cooking was cooking whole hog and giving New Yorkers an opportunity to taste it in its true form when we were back like it was in the South.
Got to ask you about that. With the whole hog, what's your breed selection like, and where do you source your product from?
Well, that's another important part of who I am, because I source my product from local farmers. You know, I'm involved with these guys, and then we control the diets, so we can come out with a very good flavor profile for you.
And
that to me is to start with the best product you can get, and then you add your specialty to it, your touch, your cooking techniques, and you should end up okay. So that's for... We've been so successful, those four.
Now, North Carolina is known to be like the birthplace, the home of barbecue.
That's correct.
So what differentiates North Carolina barbecue from, you know, other parts of the country?
Well, now, again, if you let's compare it with another state.
Okay.
Let's just say, for example, Texas.
Yep.
Well, you know, in their minds, they think beef is barbecue, but in our hearts and souls, and the Carolinas, is pork. So that's the biggest difference
That's the basic difference.
That's the basic difference right there. And then the next thing, it comes from, I must say that all pit masters, all guys that cook barbecue, develop their own bragging rights, you know, which is understandable, because, you know, you want people to come and taste yours, and you believe in who you are, so you want to say yours is the best. So it's kind of hard to really say that this guy's stuff is not as good, because in his mind, it's good to him. Because he's preparing it and doing it,
right?
And as it is in my mind, okay. But the fundamental difference is the product itself. So you have to make a selection as a consumer on whether or not you like the beef flavor of pork or the pork flavor of barbecue. And that is the basic difference right there.
Now, what about from a sauce perspective? What's
okay? Now, from a sauce perspective, now that's really. You're getting into a battle there.
That's a battle.
Yeah.
A battle zone. Let's not name any states on that one then.
That's right. It's getting into a battle zone, because most states preferably go with a tomato base.
Okay.
But in the eastern part of North Carolina, we use a vinegar base.
Right.
And, you know, we live and die by the vinegar base. And that's who I am. I'm a vinegar base guy.
Right.
But even in our own state, you know, there is wars, because in the western part of our state, they use tomato based.
Okay. Oh, they do.
Uh-huh. So North Carolina's probably the only state that has basically two battles going with sauces as it relates to their barbecue. You know, but I'm pretty sure if you're going to find most diehards, they're going to go with the vinegar base, because that really is the true signature of North Carolina barbecue.
It is. So it's the vinegar, and it's also some heat. Am I correct?
Yes, the heat. It's definitely the heat. Now, I'm a heat guy. And, you know, I'm an oddball out from what a lot of guys are advocating.
Okay.
Everybody say, let's go low and slow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, oddball out means I go hot and fast. And there's a reason why I go hot and fast, because that's the way I was taught. You know, I like my temperatures. I was taught to get my temperatures up there about 400 degrees.
Okay.
You know, or better, you know, it just depends on your comfort level.
Sure.
And the reason for that is because we believe that the more heat you get into the animal, into the meat, the more it breaks down the different parts, the cartilage and stuff like that, to caramelize it and makes it a better flavor, because it really gets done. So when you go, in my humble opinion, low and slow, you're saying, well, okay, I'm going to cook at 250 degrees. But when you put the animal on, it don't be 250 degrees, so you have to get there. You have to rise it to 250. And a lot of times, in between that distance of time, you know, if you aren't careful, you could have some mishaps, because the meat could never get hot enough, you know, so that it wouldn't spoil. So
it's a good point.
Oh, yeah.
It's
oh,
a good
yeah.
point, because you're cooking at a low temperature.
At a very low temperature.
And especially whole hog.
That's right. And you're trying to get it to 250. And especially if he's a big animal like me, a big fat guy, you know. Now, there's a reason for the big fat guy, too, because the grease is the flavor.
Right.
You know, that's what makes the flavor of the meat, okay? That's what I'm saying. So you can't wait around trying to get that big animal up to 250 degrees so you can be safe in cooking, because it's going to take a while. But if you start out with high temperatures, it immediately get there fast. You know, that's why I say I do hot and fast. Because I want the temperature to get into the meat quicker, sooner than rather later.
I got you.
Yeah.
So is there a particular size hog that is you think is best?
Well,
I mean, there's a big range. I mean,
yeah, it's a range. Well, like I said before, it all depends on your comfort zone, your cooking skills. Now, preferably, I like the big guy. You know, I like the 250.
Okay.
Yeah, on the ground. And then when you dress him out, he comes in at about 240, maybe come in about 210.
Okay.
225. Yeah. And now he gives a good flavor to me. But again, that's not putting anybody down.
That's you.
That's me.
That's you.
Yeah, so I always try to make that clear, because I don't want to feel like I'm imposing my things on people that have been comfortable in doing what they've been doing.
Right.
Yeah.
So is there a particular, what's your favorite part of the hog for you to eat? When you want to eat something, what's your favorite?
Well, I go for the tenderloin. You know, that's to me is the most succulent part. You know, and that's it. So when you go for pig picking,
yep.
You know, and you put them out there sprawled out.
Yep, you're
you
going.
Know, I'm going right for that tenderloin, buddy.
Yeah. And being a legend you are, I'm sure nobody's in front of you. That's a shot. Speaking of your friends in this food movement, who do you love working with? And you know, because obviously there's allies, right, that you work with.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm very, the Southern Foodway Alliance is a very good, strong organization that I really love. John T. Edge is a true advocate of really authenticity of cuisine,
yes.
As is Michael Pollan and, you know, a lot of other people, Peter Kaminsky, you know. Matter of fact, Peter's one that got me on this trail.
Wow.
As relates to understanding, starting out with the best product you can get. And again, let me make sure that I make clarity on that when I say the best product. That does not mean, now, I'm speaking strictly from a chef,
yes.
perspective, okay? So I'm not into the dynamics of the industry itself, you know, raised like this and, you know, commercially like that. That's not my bag. My thing is I want the best product I can get, meaning that I definitely like to know where it came from.
Sure.
I like to know that it is a full breed. In other words, I don't like...
Heritage breed.
I don't like hybrids. You know, I don't like, you know, because, you know, in some of the ways, they are artificially inseminated, okay?
Right.
But I like for it to have a natural course, meaning I like for it to have a... That's a natural process.
Yeah, an unmanipulated gene pool.
That's right.
Pool,
that's right. Unmanipulated gene pool. That's exactly right. And start out, to me, that's starting out with a good basic product. You know, and if I can trace that, if I can control that, especially the diet, then I think I can give the people what they've been getting so far is an excellent product. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you're sure. I mean, you're starting out with,
yeah.
you know, understanding the product, and then it translates into getting cooked properly.
That's right.
And then from a consumer standpoint, you're getting a really incredible...
You're getting an incredible, incredible experience, you know. I try to be what I call the keeper of the flame. I don't try to change it if it's not broken. You know what I mean?
I love that, the keeper of the flame. That's a beautiful term.
Well, you know, I was taught by my father, who actually got it from his father. Actually got it from my mother's father. Let me get that right, because there's a war going on between that too. But it was actually my mother's father who actually perfected it and handed it down. And so that's like about 150-year-old technique that we use.
Man, that's incredible.
Yeah.
And I got to ask a question about family, if I could get personal a second.
Oh, yes, indeed.
We have to know, for our viewers, how does your legacy as an African-American in the industry matter?
Well, it's important because if you trace the history of barbecue, the labor workforce, especially in the South, were basically African descents. And, of course, whenever the plantation owner wanted to have an outing, which he called a sheen dig, you know, he would always use the labor force that was on his plantation,
right,
which was basically slaves, which is okay. That's the way it was. So these guys are using techniques that were actually brought over from Africa, you see.
Yes.
Cooking it in the ground. That's where the pit come from, the technique pit. And, of course, and they were referred to as pit boys, because they weren't respected as men, but they were referred to as pit boys. But they would always be the oldest African-American that was on the plantation at the time to do most of the cooking, because he had the experience.
Right.
And so those things that I realized that I was taught by my grandfather at the time didn't resonate as much until I had an opportunity to sit down at the event of the symposium at the Southern Foodware Alliance and began to connect the dots. And then it came home for me and rang a bell for me that this is something I really can identify to.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And so, the fact that the things that I was taught, didn't realize how significant it was as it relates to the history of it. And so now you said, okay, I didn't understand why he says, no, boy, you fire this thing hot and fast. Okay, you want the temperature to get in there real hot and fast, okay? And then I didn't understand, okay, they never threw anything away. We created the phrase, we cook everything from the rooter to the tutor, which means... Yeah, we do everything, you know, cook everything, you know what I mean?
It's, head to tail, right?
The head to tail, that's right.
Beautiful.
In other words, we did cook everything other than the squeal.
Yeah, all right.
And so now it made sense to me, because nothing was thrown away. Everything was made a meal out of, you know. They chopped off the feet, and, you know, we had pickled pig feet.
Right.
You know, they chopped off the head. Okay, we had head cheese, you know, and then which now the people don't really... I don't know whether New York is ready for this or not, but, you know, there's another twist to this thing, which are the intestinals, which we call wrinkle steaks. They're chitlins. Yeah, you see what I mean?
Right.
So, and then you go out there, and she cropped off some leaves, which was known then as collars.
Yep.
And throw those ham hocks in there with those collars, buddy. So, you know, you got something going on, you know
yes,
what I mean?
You do.
And so all of this stuff now comes together, you know, in a format for me, and that's what really makes it so significant. You know, so that's why I really take pride in what I do, because it does have such a significant value to me, a little more different than some of the guys, you know, that are doing it, because of the heritage that it has.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, as you said, you are the keeper of the flame.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, that's a burden and a responsibility.
Yeah.
But it's something that's great, because it's part of who you are.
Well, here's the thing that I always say, you know, if you really want to. And if you want something that's really great to be handed down, you try not to change it if it's already right good. Coming up as a boy was already perfect to me.
Yes.
You know, but it was perfect because the format was laid out, and it was not any whole lot of changes that was there. And I left out the most important thing. You can't really have a good barbecue without sitting around with a stump of a jar of moonshine. You know, so we can kind of, oh yeah, take a little swig of that, you know, and that makes yes. the whole evening go away. Or either... maker's marks or something, you know, you need something to kind of, you know, that was a ritual for the men, you know, because that's the only time that we could get together and have fun without really getting blown out, because back in the day, men did not drink in front of the women, you know, it wasn't something that wasn't done in my household.
Okay.
But we would go outside the bar, my dad and granddad would go outside, men would go outside and take a swig, as they called it.
Yep.
You know, a little nip, or, you
a little
know.
Nip,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. But that's the beauty of all of that. And so it's like a rite of passage when you can sit out there and put on a hog, sit around and that sucker being cooked, and you sitting around passing the jug around, boy, and telling lies and jokes, you know, with
yes.
as a kid with the men. So now you're coming up into the what I call the rite of passage area, and you're keeping that tradition alive. And so that's a beautiful thing, man.
Sounds like Southern paradise to me.
It sounds like Southern paradise. It is, buddy.
It's
it is.
It's a beautiful thing, and it's a great story, and it's an inspirational story. And the fact that you're keeping this going, and you're passing this down to the next generation.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and the next generation does not necessarily have to be necessarily particular African Americans, but it's people who are passionate about learning barbecue from its original roots. And I contribute that really to the hard work that the symposium did, the Southern Food Airlines Symposium done, and writers like Calvin Trillian and John T. Edge and Michael Pollan and Peter Kaminsky, these guys, you know, who really did research and understand all of the real true history of it, you know. That to me was, I thought, was very, 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 very important, you know. I know when I visit, when Antonio Bourdain came down in North Carolina for the first time and came to my restaurant, you know, and first thing he wanted to see was he wanted to go back and look at my pits.
Yep.
Then he wanted to see who was actually cooking the pits. And see, and so it was me who was actually, my name was on the marquee, and I'm the guy back there that's cooking. And so what you're getting is the real deal, you know.
It's honest.
It's honest, that's right. So I'm not back there cooking for you or somebody. I'm cooking for me. And what the flavors that you taste is mine, and it's not someone else's, you know, who is at the forefront.
It is you.
It's me, that's right, yeah. So, and that again was something very important. Yeah.
I think that's the key thing with barbecue, too. I noticed that you guys have one and two places, not trying to, you know, start up all this whole thing with, you know, the more restaurants, the better. No. So that's really important.
Well, I mean, it's important, but I think it has a lot to do with ambitions. You know, if you're a guy that likes to have several, you know, a whole chain of them, then I don't have any problem with that personally. You know, I just basically think that for me, I like the home setting. So if I did a couple of more restaurants, I wouldn't want to do no more than maybe two or three more.
Right.
I would love to come here in New York and do a whole hog restaurant here. You know, I'm a rock star.
Men
here
who dine
want to
invest in you. You got your partners
in
New York.
You're ready.
Absolutely.
And so that to me, I think, would be the ultimate achievement. You know, and I had an opportunity. I was invited to go over to Australia and cook over there with Paul Wilson, and he's a well-known chef.
Absolutely,
over there.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, and so we did a great job. Had a lot of fun over there. So, you know, if I can strategically locate maybe four or five in really nice, highly area, real, what I call, destination,
high traffic,
yeah, destination visit points.
Yes.
I would be interested in that, you know, but not necessarily having one on every corner someplace.
Right, Well, I can tell you, you know, for us New Yorkers,
yeah,
please come.
Okay.
Yes, yes. We're begging you. We're begging you.
Give me some investors and I'll come.
All right,
like
you got it. We're gonna put that word out there.
Put that word out there. Go by and see my boy Antonio Bourdain and get somebody
on. We'll knock on his door.
Uncle Tony.
We'll get Uncle Tony.
Because Uncle Tony was the first one that came down and smoked me out. Yeah, Uncle
Fantastic.
Tony. Yeah, Uncle Tony was the one to make sure. I want to know that you're still the, you are the real deal, buddy.
I didn't
know who he was at the time when I had to sign his release form to let him say what the hell he wanted to say. I probably wouldn't have signed him because he's so honest, you know, and I was just getting started, but it didn't matter. And I was lucky enough that when I signed the release form so he can just speak freely, he just told it like it really was.
Yeah,
went out there and visited my farms with the pigs and everything, so he just really researched everything. And so, and I didn't realize at that time that was the beginning of what Ed Mitchell has become. Keeper of the flames, you know.
Keeper of the flames, well.
And speaking of the real deal, you are the real deal. Thank you for bringing up that Southern charm and food to New York City, and we love you for it.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me, man, and I look to come up and spend some time with you.
All right, absolutely. Yeah, listen, awesome. Thank you so much. And for
an honor.
Men Who Dine and Heritage Radio Network, thank you so much.
Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 organization with over 30 weekly podcasts. Visit our website for more information or connect with us on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram, iTunes, or Stitcher for more. Thanks for listening.